Welcome to Expanding Your Faith, a podcast hosted by Bishop Greer Godsey of the Old Catholic Churches International. Expanding Your Faith brings together a panel of well-educated clergy and laity to discuss modern events with a biblical perspective. Our podcast is about to start. Please stay tuned. Welcome to Expanding Your Faith. I'm Bishop Greer, and joining me this evening is Bishop Ben.
Greetings to everybody.
And we are minus Reverend Mark tonight. He is off spending time with family, but we hope that he's having a great time and everything. We survived the winter apocalypse that they had predicted that ultimately didn't happen. So
that's a good thing.
We got a little bit of snow and ice, but it looked pretty on the trees and stuff, but it was not anything super major, so we're thankful.
Yes.
Bishop Ben is still down there battling the extremely cold weather in Texas.
That has had a real bad ice storm that kind of made them have to dig out.
Right.
The east central Texas had a ice storm, so it was pretty bad for them up in the east side of Texas. But otherwise, we're doing okay. We're faring okay.
That's good.
The electrical grid finally held together for once, so we didn't have to worry about that.
Yeah, certain politicians did not have to run to
Cancun
to stay warm. So
exactly.
that's a good thing. And then, I'm kind of glad that Texas didn't have loss in their power grid. That would have been devastating, especially for all those people that have to be on oxygen and stuff like that, support.
Or elderly that can't afford to have heat.
Right, right.
And they rely on certain things to keep them warm.
And of course, we also have the fire apocalypse going on out in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
No, it was not started by gay people. I've already checked with all the gay people I know. None of them spontaneously combusted out in the Palisades.
That eliminates the flaming gay people.
Yeah, so you can't blame this one on them.
Nope.
Jeez. And I have seen a few people blaming the fires in California on gay people. It's sadly just part of what happens in our fundamentalist Christian society.
Correct.
So I think tonight we're going to talk a little bit about what's coming. You know, we know that everybody is concerned and worried about the future of our country, the future of society, because of who won the election. And I want to start off by saying that your fears and your anxieties are very valid. This is not a situation that we were prepared for. It's not a situation that our founding fathers thought would be ever happen. I don't think they ever anticipated this kind of person becoming president, not once but twice. And of course, the fact that they were able to wiggle their way through criminal trials and come out on the other side without any jail time is remarkable, considering the fact that the very party they represent purports to be the party of law and order, the party that respects cops that respects the law. In fact, just this past week, the Congress passed a new law. I want to say it's the Laney-Rainey Act.
Correct.
And it actually demands that anyone convicted of a felony who is an immigrant be deported immediately.
Immediately, yeah.
Which I think is rather hypocritical, considering that, well, unless you're Native American, we're all immigrants. And if that's the case, then the current incoming president of the United States has to be deported. But sadly, they don't see the irony in that.
They don't. And, again, I'm going to go back to President Jimmy Carter's funeral. Mm-hmm. There was quite a few homilies that were given, the eulogies.
Eulogies. Mm-hmm.
And the messages that were given out were going over somebody's head, directly just going over deaf ears.
Right.
And it's sad because the messages needed to be heard.
Right.
They needed to be heard to bring unity in the time of disparage.
And that's a good point, too. You know, we did just lose former President Jimmy Carter. He is a man who dedicated his life to living the gospel message, taking care of the poor, the widow, and the orphan. Back about a year or two ago, he suffered a fall at his home, broke his hip. A few months later, he fell again, bruised himself up real bad, had a black eye, cut on his head. The very next day, he went to build a home for Habitat for Humanity, to help build a home for Habitat for Humanity.
You sure did.
And, you know, that's the kind of person that is truly living the gospel message. It's not just lip service for him. He actually lived it. And I think that many of the politicians today could certainly take a page from Carter's book. As his grandson pointed out at the funeral, Carter spent about 6 years in politics, and the other 94 years he lived in Plains, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important to note. A lot of people discredit Carter based on that 6 years. That 1 6-year period out of his life, and have decided that he's a terrible person, when he spent the rest of those 94 years doing exactly what the Bible said to do.
Correct.
So I think that it's important that we reflect upon that as we have an administration change here in just a few days. The 20th of January, we usher in a lot of uncertainty. And a lot of people are scared, concerned, and upset, and that's to be expected. We don't know what is going to happen. We don't know how much of what's been said is bluster. And how much of it is actually stuff he's going to try to do. For instance, we don't know whether or not he's serious about invading Greenland or invading Panama or invading Canada to force them to hand over property that is not ours under this misguided idea of manifest destiny. An idea that should have died off centuries ago, but unfortunately right. Still lives in his head.
Full strong.
Right. And so I think that it's it is something that bears watching, and it is something that it's normal to be concerned about. It's normal to be upset about. to worry about. My biggest worry are those individuals that will be hurt by his, if not action, certainly rhetoric. You know, his rhetoric that, you know, LGBT are somehow evil and disordered. And, you know, people hear that from someone in power and someone in authority, and they tend to internalize it. And it ends up becoming something that drives them to do things they wouldn't normally do.
And the sad thing that is really, really scary is you have the Christian fundamentalists that are out there that are calling the LGBTQ community a mental illness problem.
Right.
Which it is not. It really has been debunked so many times that it's not a mental illness.
Right.
It's a dysphoria. And this look at it this way, it's a spectrum. Just like anything else is a spectrum. So, you know, how do they expect a marginalized community to get along if you're going to keep them under the spotlight and keep calling them mental illness people?
Well, yes, and also on top of that, yeah, so many people who are just trying to live their lives, just trying to be normal human beings.
Correct.
And this rhetoric has inspired places like Idaho to file a request to the Supreme Court to overturn Obergefell, 2015, which was the ruling that allowed for gay marriage. So now you're talking about ripping people's families apart, ripping their marriages apart, which is certainly not something that Jesus would do. Jesus would certainly not be out there advocating for the government to do that kind of thing. In fact, I think Jesus would probably be very frustrated and angered by
the
this kind of action, yeah.
And you know, to go back to Sundays, you say it best during the Mass. That the table is only excluding people that Jesus would exclude himself, which is nobody.
Right.
You know, why can't we take that and put that in practice on an everyday basis? Mm-hmm. That doesn't only cover for communion within our church or anybody else, but we can use that as a daily practice. Mm-hmm. Who would Jesus exclude today? Nobody.
Nobody.
But to see, you get these people that are the Christian fundamentalists, they wouldn't know Jesus if he walked into their church today.
Right.
Well, wouldn't know them.
I suspect many people, if Jesus were to appear in the churches today, many of them would demand that ICE come and deport him.
Exactly.
You know, get rid of him because he's another whiny immigrant liberal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
People ask me routinely, Bishop, why do you preach politics from the pulpit? I don't preach politics from the pulpit.
You do not. No, you do not.
I preach the Bible from the pulpit. And as much as people hate it, Jesus was very much a woke socialist.
Correct. He was. Know?
His idea of the ideal Christian community were people that shared with each other, looked after each other, looked after the community that they were in, made sure that there was enough food for everyone to eat. Everyone. I mean, we have several examples in the New Testament where he fed people. And he had as many as 5,000 men, it said, in one account, which didn't count all the women and children there, which could put the number well over 10,000. And he fed each and every one of them without asking for their papers, without asking if they were worthy, without expecting them to show him any kind of fealty or loyalty before doing it. He just did it. They were hungry, and he fed them.
Exactly.
And we purport to be a Christian nation. We're not a Christian nation. We never were a Christian nation. But we purport to be a Christian nation. And yet people lobby to have poor people kicked off of welfare and to have orphans, you know, sent away to schools where they'll never be seen again, or, you know, to treat widows with such disrespect that they take away what little pension they have, what little bit of income they have, after working themselves to the bone most of their lives.
Correct. And we even see it now, that even as the wheels turn for the new administration to come in, we already see some of the stuff at play and some of the discussions where they're already discussing to even take away veterans' benefits.
Right.
After these poor men and women have served our country.
Right.
To keep us free.
Yes.
Or somewhat free. You know, I tell people every day, until you can join the military, walk that line and pick up that rifle, keep the comments to yourself, because you don't know how it is to serve.
Right.
Unless you actually have done it.
And so, you know, this is what we're facing in the nation. And, you know, I'm not going to tell people who are LGBT, people who are people of color, black people, immigrants, refugees, orphans, widows. I'm not going to tell them, you should sit down and be quiet because, you know, it'll all be okay. No, it's not okay.
Nope.
You know, Jesus gave Christians a very clear command to love our neighbors as ourselves.
Correct.
And if you would not want to have to do without food or medical care or a safe place to live or a family that loves you, then why do you expect that for your neighbor? Why do you want that for your neighbor? And I've heard from many a MAGA individual lately about how Jesus doesn't approve of people who break the law and come here illegally. And I have to remind people, there is nothing illegal about crossing the border. It's a civil matter. It's not a criminal matter. It is not against the law for them to cross the border. And in fact, when seeking asylum, they have to present themselves at a port of entry to claim asylum.
Uh-huh.
And many of the ports of entry in the United States are inside the country. They're not on the outside of the country. They're not at the borders. They're inside the country. And so in order to submit a request to be a refugee, to seek asylum in this country, you actually have to come here.
You got to cross that line. Yep.
And people just don't understand that concept, because many of them have never had to face that. And they don't understand because they've never had to do that. And so many of their parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, great-great-great-great-grandparents probably came through ports like Ellis Island and came to this country seeking refuge or asylum. And then some just came and stayed. They didn't bother to go through the legal processes. They just came and stayed. And so their families have been here, you know, three or four generations. Of course, by now, they're considered citizens. But they entered the country without, you know, going through the proper process, as people would say.
Well, that's like my great grandparents. They came into the country way back before there was even a border laws and regulations.
Right.
They came into Texas when Texas wasn't Texas; it was Mexico.
Right.
Back in the olden days. So you have to think how many generations of the Noriegas were out there.
Right.
That just stayed because they didn't have to leave, and became, you know, citizens after the many many decades.
And that's an important point, you know, where do you draw the line? And for some people. It's, oh, well, it's just people who are coming across the border now. And they say that not understanding the full-throated hypocrisy that they're spewing.
Correct.
Because, you know, their families came here as undocumented aliens. And if they didn't say that, then they would be ones being sent back to a country they never have ever been to.
Exactly.
Know nothing of. My family, for instance, came here from England and France, Germany, and Ireland, or Prussia. It wasn't Germany yet, but Prussia. And came here to find a better life. You know, if they decide to send me back, first of all, which country am I going to?
Right.
And then, you know, I've never left the United States. So, I mean, I'm going to a country I know nothing about. I've never visited. Probably don't have any family there anymore. Or if I do, they don't know me. I don't know them. So where would I go?
And see, that brings up a good point, because was it Trump or was it one of his cronies that mentioned, I don't remember which one, I can't quote him on it, but I do remember hearing in the news that they wanted to end the birthright citizenship.
Right.
So you're going to, in a sense, send people back to countries and cultures that they have nothing to deal with, that they even know about.
Right.
And they're going to be scared out of their mind.
Well, and how far back do you go for that? I mean,
exactly. How many generations are you going to go back? You're going to go back one generation, 10 generations? How many generations are you going to go back for this?
Right. Because ultimately, a lot of it, I mean, if you go all the way back to the Founding Fathers, none of them came here legally.
Correct.
You know, under the standard of today. Their children made them birthright, made them anchor babies. You know, their parents had anchor babies, and that made them legal citizens of the United States after the Constitution. So at that point, you know, there's very few people living in America who would still be here by the time the purge happened. Purge was finished.
And, you know, I think one of our followers is here quite often, Blackbird, he said it best one night, and he said, how can you be an illegal on a land that was stolen to begin with?
Right.
And that's a very good point, but see, people refuse to acknowledge that America was built on the backs of slaves, was built on immigrants. They think that America was always white. And
right.
It hasn't been that way. It was not that way.
No.
So, you know, one has to wonder, how far are we willing to go back? I even had a Hispanic pastor ask me, because I'm part of the coalition here in Houston for the Hispanic Chamber of Churches. He asked me, he said, what is your church stance on if the INS comes to raid your church? I told him, I'm not cooperating, because I don't have to.
Right.
I don't have to cooperate with the raids. Yes, I may be detained, but I don't have to cooperate, and neither do you.
For millennia, religious buildings, churches, synagogues, mosques,
they're considered sanctuaries.
Have been sanctuaries.
Yeah.
You know, even in the Old Testament, it made it very clear that if you require sanctuary, if you go in and you grab the horns of the altar and claim sanctuary, you can't be removed from the temple.
Exactly.
You know, you have to be granted sanctuary. And so, you know, that's God's own word. And so if somebody comes requesting sanctuary, we're going to give them sanctuary.
Exactly.
And INS or Border Patrol or ICE try to cross that threshold, they're in a violation of millennia of precedence.
Exactly.
When it comes to the sanctuary and religious spaces. And so I think it's important that we keep that in mind too. It's going to be another rough 4 years. That's not, I don't say that to scare people. It's just the reality that it's going to be a rough 4 years as we deal with these archaic laws, these outdated notions, not to mention the racism and bigotry that's being introduced. And it's trickling down even into our social media spaces, you know, with places like Facebook getting rid of fact-checking, getting rid of protections of the LGBTQIA community, allowing people to use slurs and abusive language against the LGBT community on social media, all because they claim that with the political landscape change, that they have to do this. They don't have to do this. This is the cowardly thing to do, is to capitulate before you're even asked. And that's what companies like Meta are doing. I mean, they're capitulating before anybody even says anything to them. You know? So that makes it very difficult for us, because it means that there are fewer and fewer safe spaces for people, for Black people, people of color, women, immigrants, and the LGBTQIA community. Like I said at the top, you know, Idaho's already trying to overturn gay marriage. And with it, we'll overturn all the protections that are afforded to married couples. And I think it's interesting because Idaho is using the Dobbs decision, which overturned Roe v. Wade, as their basis. Exactly what we here on this broadcast said would happen. We said that when you get rid of Roe, there are a bunch of laws, decisions of courts based on Roe.
They were all tied together, exactly.
Right. And so when you pull out that one card out of the house of cards, everything crumbles. And people were quick to say, oh, you're overreacting. It'll never happen. It, you know, this is a one-off situation. Well, here we are. It was not a one-off situation. We now have to battle this Idaho situation in court. Fight to stop it from happening. And just like the 2000 fight between Gore and Bush, Bush v. Gore, which they said, that's a one-off. It'll never happen again. It's just narrowly construed just for this situation. And now North Carolina is using that very same ruling to try to throw out 60,000 votes and overturn the election for a liberal judge so that they can put in a conservative judge instead, who lost right. the election by 60,000 votes.
And see, so, that takes me back to, remember when Trump was during the first election, he was asking a governor in Georgia to find some votes somewhere. Right. He didn't care how it was done to find them.
Right.
You know, if that kind of corruption level is in our government, where does it end?
Right.
Where is the stopgap measure? In all sense, the Supreme Court, some of the justices have removed guardrails, so we have nothing in safety, no more safety nets.
Right.
So what happens with society? It's going to fall apart eventually.
And sadly, that's very true. My daughter made a comment the other night, which I don't think I had ever really given much thought to, and that was that we are now in post-capitalist society. And I had to do a little research on this because she was a little better versed in it than I was, which kind of shocked me. But the idea is that as capitalism declines and fails, corporations take over.
Correct.
You know, it becomes about protecting corporations, building up corporations, money for CEOs, money for stockholders. And they begin to choose the path of the country. They begin to lead the country versus politicians and legislatures and judges. And I think that we are in that post-capitalistic society now. I mean, you see that people like Elon Musk, you know, a huge corporation like Elon Musk, basically taking over the political spectrum in the United States and imposing his will. A lot of questions have been raised about why Trump is so insistent upon taking over Greenland. And someone pointed out to me the other day, and I had to verify it, but it's true that Greenland has a lot of natural resources that companies like Tesla use to build batteries. And those are resources that are running out in other countries. And Greenland won't let them come in there and take their natural resources without, you know, paying fair value for it.
Correct.
And so a way to stop that is to go in and take over Greenland, and then we can take whatever resources we want. And so I don't think that it's a shock or a surprise that before Musk became huge on Trump's campaign, a huge supporter of Trump, and began making regular visits to Mar-a-Lago, that Trump had no real desire to go after Greenland, and then all of a sudden, now he's gung-ho about it.
And, you know, this leads us back to the conversation we had, what was it, Thursday night, I believe, that we were discussing about how we're so close to the point of no return for the global warming and the environment changing. One has to wonder if us as a society, we had been better off not inventing the combustion engine and just staying with horse-drawn carriages and keeping the environment clean.
Well, I certainly think that we've made a lot of mistakes along the way. I mean, we didn't think far enough ahead. We didn't consider all of the potential issues that might arise from things like industrialization, combustion engines, or the very thought of be fruitful and multiply. I had a discussion this week with a young man on TikTok who just absolutely believed that God saying go be fruitful and multiply was a commandment from God, which it's not, but a commandment from God, and that, you know, it is our duty to be fruitful and multiply. And thus, people who can't, gay people and the like, are living against God's will. And I said to him, you know, in about the 25,000 years or so, 25,000 years that Homo sapiens sapiens been around, not even going to go back into all the other species of the Homo line. Just Homo sapiens sapiens. The last 20,000 years or so. If every single Homo sapiens sapiens, male and woman, male and female, had decided to be fruitful and multiply and continued that for 20,000 years, we wouldn't be at 8 billion people on this planet. We would probably be at 100,000 or 100 billion, rather, people or more. There wouldn't be anywhere to put them. There'd be no clean water. There'd be no clean air. There'd be no trees. There'd be no vegetation. There'd be no crops. You know, we'd literally be on a dying rock at that point. We're already struggling to feed, house, clothe, and take care of 8 billion people. You know, because we just simply do not have the natural resources to do it. And so, if we continue on that path, climate change is going to get worse. The ecosystem will start to break down. Life will become essentially very difficult to maintain here on Earth. And I made the comment to him that I think, you know, Mother Nature is trying to tell us something, you know, with the fires and with the earthquakes and the huge hurricanes, you know. Just this past year in 2024, Augusta, Georgia saw something they'd never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are so far inland that typically by the time a hurricane has come on shore, reaches us, you know, it might be a tropical storm level or, you know, have some gust of wind and a little bit of rain, but we actually had a Category 1 hurricane in Augusta, Georgia.
Yeah.
Because it was such a powerful storm that it was not able to diminish by the time it reached us. And we have millions, if not billions, of dollars worth of damage here, not to mention over 200 people who died from the hurricane. So, I mean, that's not something that is normal. But it is something that's happening more frequently.
Exactly. And we're seeing it more every year and every day we're seeing it. Like, case in point, look at Texas with the weird weather patterns we've been having with the extreme hot and extreme cold.
Right.
Everybody across the world is experiencing global change. And right. At what point do we wake up and say, hey, we better take care of what we have because we're not going to have it anytime soon.
Right.
Even the materials that they want from Greenland are contributing to those batteries that they're developing. People don't realize those batteries are more harmful than they are good for the environment.
Right.
When they catch on fire, they burn 18 to 34 hours straight.
Right.
Where's all that pollutants going? Into the air? Into right. the groundwater?
It just releases all of that out there.
Exactly.
And then people have the audacity to say, well, why does God allow little kids to get cancer? It has nothing to do with God. It has to do with the microplastics. It has to do with all the carcinogens that we put in the air and the water and the drugs and pesticides and
yep.
all this stuff that we utilize.
We live in a polluted environment where right. even the farming industry is no longer a clean industry. They're using all kinds of pesticides, GMOs. Back in the olden days, they didn't have any of that.
No, they did not.
You grew tomatoes straight out of the ground with no chemicals. You grew corn. You ate it all raw from the... Even back in the old days, in 1965, they drank milk straight from the cow.
Right.
It wasn't pasteurized.
And I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not advocating for going back to unpasteurized milk. Because, you know, millions of people died over the years from diseases from unpasteurized milk.
Correct.
But there are things that are being done, like the constant increase of antibiotics and drugs in cattle.
Mm-hmm.
Which then when you drink that milk, causes antibiotic-resistant bacteria to form.
Correct.
We have a huge increase in E. coli in cattle. 50% of the birds, chickens particularly,
in the United States
had to be killed off because of bird flu. You know, because you can't serve tainted meat and tainted eggs from bird flu. Because you then introduce that into the human population. So, I mean, these are all signs of what happens when we allow our hubris to take over. And that's what we're living through right now, is that period of, you know, people call it FAFO, fuck mm-hmm. around and find out.
Yep.
And For those that have delicate sensibilities, I apologize for using that word, but we're in the find out phase now. You know, we've screwed around so long with our planet, with our natural resources, with everything, that we're now in the find out portion of that. And that makes it difficult. Go ahead.
I was going to say, even it's too late now, because even though we're in the find out phase, we can't, some of the damage that we have created in this on the planet is irreversible.
Right.
We can't fix it anymore because it's so far gone. What do you do?
Yeah, there's nothing you can do.
We can't build another planet.
No. And as we said a few minutes ago, you know, scientists have been saying for the last little bit that we are just about at the point of no return when it comes to climate change.
Exactly.
And I think that that's only going to get worse, too, as we go along. You know, because we refuse to do anything to correct the problem. You know, we don't want electric cars. We don't want hydrogen vehicles. We don't want natural gas vehicles. Things that would help curb stem the tide of climate change. Because, you know, it's not manly. It's not exciting. You can't blow out chunks of decaying dinosaur smoke all over the place to show how manly you are.
Right.
In an electric car. You know? So they don't want that.
And you know, what is sad is, and there was a guy on TikTok that I saw a video, and he was a big oil and gas guy, industry guy. And he quit being that person because he realized how much damage he was causing to the environment. He says, and in reality, he said, and I remember him saying it in big, big terms. He says, nobody's going to change because if we start changing, it's going to hurt the millionaires' pockets, and they don't want that.
Well, exactly. You know, people like Chevron and Shell and
BP.
Exxon and BP mm-hmm. are... I mean, they are amongst the, 28 companies that, you know, have the highest profits in the world.
Correct. And also have the highest number of safety violations and environmental accidents they've had in the past millennia.
Right. And so they're not going to want those types of things, so they try to push against it. And far too often, people in power are willing to accept bribes. They're willing to accept, they bribes. I mean, that's what it is. They call it campaign financing, but it's bribes to vote against people surviving and to vote for harmful laws that, basically endanger our environment, endanger our society, and our culture, and keep those types of oligarchs in power, keep them billions.
One has to wonder if, like I said this other night too during the discussion, if God is sitting up there in heaven with a reboot button saying, should I push the reboot button?
Right.
Should I reset everything like it did with the dinosaurs?
Right.
There's a reason why dinosaurs are extinct.
Right.
Is there a possibility that one day he might get tired of us and reboot us?
Well, let's be honest. I think the reason the dinosaurs are extinct is God knows someone like me would probably be out there trying to ride a T-Rex.
Right. Me too.
So, to protect idiots like me from myself.
Exactly. Me too.
God said the big lizards have to go.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, it's a valid point. And scientists have been saying for a while now, we're headed for the next extinction level event. And
correct.
It'll be a human extinction level event. Mm-hmm. And that saddens me. And I know that it saddens all of you too. And I don't want us to just leave on a down note. I mean, I know it sounds hopeless, but As I will be doing through Lent, I've decided to, instead of it being a small study, I'm going to do it as every Sunday in Lent, how to be a resisting church. We have to resist these things that we know are wrong.
Right.
We have to resist this abuse of power. And we have to resist the desire to basically ruin our environment, ruin our world, and stop the oligarchs and politicians from destroying everything that we have. It's not going to be easy, but it is important that we all band together to do that. Because our lives literally depend on it.
Exactly. And I wanted to highlight, you know, and I know we do this quite often, but I wanted to highlight our parish in Philadelphia, St. Mary's, because they are taking an initiative in themselves to reduce their carbon footprint, which I'm very, very proud of Richard James and St. James George to do what he did to reduce the carbon footprint of the parish.
Yeah, James St. George, our bishop in Philadelphia, he is, when they first started the parish years ago, they started with a green pledge. And that was that no matter where they were, no matter what they were doing, they would do everything they could to be carbon neutral. And so they bought a building, rather than building a building, they bought a building that already existed and renovated it, improved it, minimized the amount of electricity it uses. They put in water fountains that have, you know, the ability for reusable water jugs to be filled up in them. Low-flow toilets, which do not require you to flush them a dozen times. They usually go down the first time. It's not uncommon. They did a lot, and just recently they began installing air hand dryers and things of that nature in the school and church so that they are no longer using paper towels and stuff for drying their hands and whatnot. Another step towards a green initiative.
Exactly. And he's also, I noticed he also has taken the initiative to planting fresh trees.
Right. They lost
that helps out too.
They lost a bunch of trees during Superstorm Sandy.
Correct.
Around their property. Some were hundreds of years old that came down. And since then, they've had an initiative to plant new trees to replace them. And trees that are of that particular area, not, you know, like Japanese dogwood that, you know, is not indigenous to this area.
Correct.
But rather trees that are indigenous to that area to help support the ecosystem, you know. And so, and then on a personal note, he'll be upset that I not upset, mentioned he'll it. Be embarrassed. He'll be embarrassed that I mentioned this. But I mention this because it's important. He doesn't just live that as a church. In his own home, he installed solar panels.
Correct. I remember that.
And is doing everything he can to reduce his own carbon footprint amongst his family in his own personal home. And so it's not just an act. It's a way of life. And some of that's because we're Franciscans, and we take very Correct. Seriously God's mandate to take care of the earth. Francis was very much attached to nature, attached to animals. And so he made sure that he left a legacy for the brothers that came after him, that we take care of our planet, take care of the animals in our planet. And we as Franciscans take that very seriously. That's why my house is a freaking zoo.
Correct.
You know, two cats, two rabbits, and a dog. All rescues, every last one I'm a rescue, and you know, because we can't say no, you know, when a poor animal comes to our door, we take care of it. And we also have three outdoor cats. They're all fixed. They've all been spayed or neutered. And we feed them and we take care of them. We make sure that they're well taken care of. They have a place to go when it's cold and when it's rainy on our porch so that they can get shelter. And we feed them every day. You know, so, I mean, we live that mandate in our Franciscan life every single day.
Correct.
And I think that more people need to begin embracing that before we don't have a world to be on anymore.
Exactly. And, you know, the thing is, even for me on my end, even though I live in an apartment, I still take every step I can to live the Franciscan life, you know.
Right, right.
It's very important that we do that, because if we're going to say we're Franciscans, we need to live that Franciscan life and take to heart what the teachings of St. Francis was.
Right. And so there are ways that you can do that too. I mean, you can do that in your own home. You know, looking at ways to reduce your carbon footprint, recycle. You know, we're big about recycling here. They do that at St. Miriam. Bishop Ben does that in yes. Houston. Recycle, reduce, you know, reuse. I know that's a slogan that's been around for a long time, but it works. It's time-honored. You know, instead of throwing that milk jug away, keep it, wash it out, use it for Kool-Aid for your kids or tea yep. or, you know, or even coffee. Reverend Mark and I were talking about this the other day. As winter storm, I think they called this one Cindy, but I'm not sure. As the winter storm bared down on us, he made the comment, you know, you ought to brew up some coffee now, put it in a gallon jug for later, just in case the power goes out, and then you have coffee to drink.
That's a very good idea. Smart.
I didn't even think of it. You know, it's one of those things that never even came to my mind. And then I'm like, wow, yeah, I mean, I've got all these milk jugs that we, you know, recycle. I could take a milk jug and fill it up with coffee and have it for later, you right. know, if the power goes out. And so, and I may do that anyway. You know, I like cold coffee, iced coffees. And so I may brew up some... a gallon of coffee, make it up like I like it, put it in the refrigerator, and then it's ready go. Whenever it's I need coffee. It. You
yeah,
know
exactly.
So there are many different ways that we can be part of the solution, even in the midst of what seems like utter despair. We can find ways to be part of the solution and to begin to make healthy changes for ourselves and those around us. And hopefully people will see that we're making positive changes and they'll want to join us. And with each person you reach with a positive change, that's one less problem to face in the world around us. So I think that's important. We're reaching the end here, Bishop Ben. So give me your final thoughts, my friend.
Well, as we draw near to this inauguration and change of uncertainty, I just urge the people that are listening to our podcast and the people around us in across the U.S. Yes, it may seem that times are uncertain, but please keep in mind to keep shining bright and keep strong.
Amen. And I mirror that comment, but I also say too, and I know this is difficult, and I said this to Bishop Jim earlier when I talked to him on the phone, and that was, we still have to pray for the president.
Correct.
Even though we may not like him, we definitely may not support what he does, but we pray for him. I know we don't pray for him to die. We pray
no.
that God change his heart, that God make him into a better person, inspire him to do what's best for all people, and in some regards, in the midst of that, we still resist. We still fight for good. We still fight for justice.
Amen.
We still fight for equality. but all the while continuing to pray for conversion. Because I have seen many hard hearts change for good by God.
Amen.
So I pray that we can make that change in our country one step at a time, one prayer at a time, one person at a time. Well, my friends, it is always a blessing to come to you by this medium and to do these podcasts. We'll be back next Saturday night for our next edition of Expanding Your Faith. We're going to talk about mental health and when is it time to say enough is enough. In other words, when is it time to set boundaries, to you know, cut off people who just refuse to get help and that kind of thing. That's what we're going to talk about next week. Reverend Mark will be with us, Bishop Ben, and
yes,
we'll have a good discussion on that. So join us for that next week. Until then, God loves you and so do we. Keep shining bright, my friends. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Expanding Your Faith. For more information on Expanding Your Faith, check us out on facebook.com/expandingyourfaith. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you find your podcasts. Until next week, when we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright.